हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 2. Mangalacharan by Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushana. Tvaj jata kalitot pata mat prana santyam amit trabhit etan sadhi tata deva yata sad pata gaminaha. O Lord, O killer of enemies, my life breaths, arising from you, have left the path of virtue. O Lord, please bring them under control and make them follow the path of bhakti. Overview of Adhikarnas. So we have, how many Adhikarnas? Okay, so 13 Adhikarnas. So Brahman is the origin of the secondary prana. The senses are 11, the senses are atomic in size. The vital prana, the life force, has an origin. The vital prana is not air. The vital prana is an instrument of the jiva. The vital prana is the primary agent of the jiva. The vital prana has 5 functions. The vital prana is atomic. Brahman is the ruler of pranas. The vital prana is not a sense. The forms of the material world are created by Brahman, and the vehicles of the jiva are made from earth. So we're establishing that the primary prana is coming from the Lord. The secondary is also coming from the Lord. Right, so everything that is functioning with, and it's made out of the material elements. Right, so then the jiva is an instrument in that process, but because he identifies with it, he becomes the agent. Right, you don't identify, and you're doing things for Krishna, then it gives a different result. Adhikarna nanu sharanam. Summary of the thematic adhikarna. The pada splits into 3 subsections as follows. Adhikarnas 1 through 3, 1 through 7. Brahman creates prana, but it doesn't say what 1 through 3 is.
1 through 3 is adhikarnas, number of adhikarnas.
Oh, that's the adhikarnas, okay. Okay, Brahman creates prana. Brahman creates mukhya prana. And Brahman creates the subtle and gross forms. Okay. So in Adhikarnas is 1 through 3, Sutras 1 through 7. The section deals with 2 schools, namely the Nyayikas and the Shankyites. Some other schools claim that prana, senses, are eternal. The Sutrakar proves that prana is created just like any other elements of the Panchamahabhuta, as demonstrated in the previous pada. Since prana is material in nature, its origin lies in Brahman, Adhikarna 1. Nyaya, they claim that senses are 7. This is disapproved by quoting Shastras, which sum up the account of senses to be 11. 5 karmendriyas plus 5 gyanendriyas plus the mind. So that's Adhikarna 2. Shankya, they claim senses are pervading. This is refuted by proving that the atomic jiva possesses atomic senses. Right, so otherwise the senses go everywhere. The problem is everybody's everywhere, the senses are everywhere, the consciousness is everywhere. Then what's the difference between any one living entity and another?
Didn't we discuss it
before? Yes, but now we're discussing from the aspect of senses. Right? Because before it's just that the jiva themselves pervades everything. Like that. So we've shown the jiva doesn't. Okay, well through his senses he pervades everything. But, you know, it's just a matter of trying to get your philosophy by hook or by crook. Is that? Yeah. Adhikaranas, for, and also the senses are atomic, so they're just acting through the primary and secondary pranas. And then the senses that they're acting through are made out of material, you know, out of earth. Right? So that's what's coming up. So the point is the jiva is quite small. Adhikaranas 4 through 11, sutras 8 through 19. Brahman creates mukhya prana. This section refutes the erroneous views of Shankya and Yoga in reference to mukhya prana, life force. They claim that mukhya prana is eternal. However, it will be proved that similar to the elements, even the mukhya prana has its origin in the Lord, Adhikarana 4. They claim that mukhya prana is air. The sutrakar demonstrates that the mukhya prana is neither air alone nor the movements of air, since the shrutis declare it to be a specific kind of air born from Brahman. Nor is it the actions of air, since it is out of question for one prana to perform activities of all the senses. Adhikarana 5. They claim that mukhya prana is all pervading. This is refuted by scriptural citations that mukhya prana is not all pervading, but atomic in nature. Adhikarana 9. They claim that mukhya prana is a sense. The mukhya prana is not a sense like the other pranas, since the shrutis differentiate between the two on the basis of two factors, namely nature and activity. Hence, mukhya prana is not a sense.
But if it's not a sense, then what it is?
It's just the life airs on which it's moving. It's just the force that makes it function. You know, it's just like, let us say, you have the fire, right? You have the pan, and in the pan you have some vegetables. So, by the influence of the fire, the vegetables are frying. But the fire is not cooking. It's fire. Cooking is a different thing. Does that make sense? So the prana is there. It's the life force that makes things, you know, able to move, but it's not the sense. It gives the potency. Let's say the electricity is not the toaster. But without the electricity, the toaster doesn't work.
What does it matter if it's a sense or not a sense?
It just depends. They probably have some angle in their philosophy why they're trying to make it a sense. You know, it's like businessmen trying to find loopholes in the tax laws. They're going to try to maintain exactly the same position. So as the laws change, then they still try to find the loophole so they can do the same thing. You know. Is that, yeah. So it's just like I told you, that one businessman, he went to Italy, bought 1,000 pairs of shoes. And he had them pack them, all the right shoes in one shipment, all the left shoes in another shipment. He sent one shipment to Bombay, the other shipment to Delhi. Right? So then they come in, custom sees them, because it's there, then nothing's been arranged before, they seize it. Right? Then anything seized goes up for auction, right? So then when they open the thing, then there's 1,000 right shoes, you know, or 1,000 left shoes. Who wants 1,000 right shoes? No one knows about the other shipments in Bombay. So then he goes up there and for a very minimal price buys the whole thing, right? So it would have been way cheaper than the tax. And then he goes down to Bombay and does the same thing. And now he has 1,000 shoes. Right? So like that, they're trying whatever it is to find a way to get around the rules. So when you say is that, you know, that the Lord is supreme and we're part and parcel and we're not God, they're trying to find some way that they're... So this is just one of their methods. Does it mention why, by it being a sense, that it's advantageous for them?
That's all my fault. You know, I've not mentioned it earlier.
Okay.
It's for my own reference.
Hmm?
It's for my own reference.
Okay. Yoga. They claim that mukhya prana is the jiva. The mukhya prana is a tool which the jiva exercises as long as the jiva continues to reside in the material world. Hence, the mukhya prana is not identical with the jiva. Right? You're using it, but it's Krishna's given it. It's like his quota, he gives. It's like the sun. You use the sun, but it's not yours. Right? The farmer takes advantage of the sun for growing his crops, but the sun's not his. Mm-hmm. They claim Mukhi Prana to be without action. The Mukhi Prana is Sisajiva by governing the senses, hence it has an activity. But it's just that it's inert. No, it's doing something. So you see, they'll go back and forth on this. They'll say something's active, say it's not, depending on which angle. They claim that Mukhi Prana is five types of air. The Mukhi Prana composing of five different functions is named differently, and hence not five types of air, but one. It's just one air, and as it does a different function, it's given a different name. Does that make sense? So that you can distinguish. You know, inner breath and outer breath, it'll have one name. Expanding the body, contracting the body, it'll have a different name. But it's just one life air. They claim that Mukhi Prana is independent. The Mukhi Prana and Prana don't act independently. Brahmana alone is their instigator. And the Devatas and the Jiva being the secondary instigators. Right? So Krishna as Paramatma, he's controlling these things. Adhikarna is 12 to 13, Sutras 20 to 22. Brahman creates the subtle and gross forms. Advaitins. They claim the Jiva is the creator. They especially posit that Hiranyagarbha creates the names and forms. Which means that Brahman did not do the differentiation of name and forms by itself, but did it only through the agency of Jiva. Right? Because they'll be connecting the Jiva with Hiranyagarbha. So, as we mentioned before, there's always going to be the aspect of that whatever qualities are there in the Lord, they're going to have to give those to the Jiva or to material energy. Brahmaji. Oh, there Hiranyagarbha is Brahma. Okay, so then Brahma being a Jiva, then he's doing it, so the Lord's not doing it. That's their idea. However, this is refuted by the Sutrakar on the basis of Vedic scriptures, which teach that Brahman is both the primary and secondary cause of creation. Because otherwise it doesn't work. So the Hiranyagarbha aspect we also see is that the universal form. So Brahma is there in manifesting the secondary aspect, but the primary is originally Krishna. Right? And so the secondary is empowered with the primary. That's why it works. Otherwise the secondary, the forms of it are simply dead matter. Does that make sense? Yes.
I think that all the other philosophers, including Advaita Vadis, they only consider one universe because many...
They don't know what's beyond. Because beyond this universe basically is Pradhan. Because if there's unlimited universes and they're coming and going from the breathing of Mahavishnu, you know, then that just takes another step back where Vishnu is involved beyond the universe. Because their idea is when you get out of the universe and you're liberated. But that's the thing, they get out of the universe, they're still not liberated. They're liberated from existence in the secondary creation. Right? And even the prime, but they're still existing in the Mahatattva because they're in the Mahatattva because of the aspect of Sutra that they want to enjoy themselves separately from the Lord. Some other schools claim that the constituents of the Jiva's body is a total confusion. The opponents claim that the Shrutis failed to resolve the combination of elements that the gross body is composed of. It's refuted easily by quoting the appropriate Shruti to confirm that the gross body is made up of all three elements, namely earth, water, and fire. Adhikarna 13. Thus the Sutrakar in this Pada proves that Brahman is the origin of prana. Right, so before we had it, Brahman is the origin of the, how you say, of the?
Panchamahabhuta.
Yeah, means of the elements of the pradhan, of everything. Because they're trying to take what is Krishna's position and give it to some other means. And Achit Ishwara. They're trying to remove Ishwara from the equation. And so all those qualities of action and that are trying to be given to the Jiva and to the material energy. At the same time is they want Brahman to be beyond pristine and they want to be Brahman. Right? So the problem comes up is that activities create problems. I don't want any problems. So therefore, getting rid of all problems, then I'll become God and have no problems. Right? They don't have the knowledge, they don't have the purity to appreciate that the Lord Himself is beyond the mode. So even though He performs activities, He has a form, He's unaffected. Okay. Sutakar indicates that Adhikarnas 1 through 3 discuss the secondary prana. Adhikarna 1. Brahman is the origin of the secondary prana. Pranot pat yadikaranam. Sutra reference 2.4, 1-4. Adhikarna Pakashika. As it was shown in the last pada, Brahman is the source of the manifestation of Pancha Mahabhuta. Here in this Adhikarna, the Sutrakar aims to show that Brahman is the source of the manifestation of prana, senses. It was already explained, Vedanta Sutra 1.1.2, Janmadyasyayataha, that from Brahman arise creation, maintenance, and destruction of this universe. Hence, creation of prana arises from Brahman alone. One may ask why the word prana is interpreted as senses. The answer is given in the commentary to Vedanta Sutra 1.1.30. Shastra drishtya tupadesho vamana deva vat. Okay. Here it is explained that scriptures teach identity of the independent function with its source.
Independent function.
Oh, the dependent. Yeah. He explained that scriptures teach identity of the dependent functions with its source. That you put the two together. Just like when you explain the toaster, you explain it with the electricity. Mm-hmm. It's functioning only because of electricity, but it's given in context of. It would be foolish to say the toaster can function on its own without electricity. Mm-hmm. Right? These are not called voices, eyes, ears, or minds. They're called prana, since prana is all these things. Chandogya Upanishad 5.1.15. In this statement, the senses are called prana because their functions are dependent upon prana. Right? Does that make sense? So we're calling the senses prana. It's because when the senses work, then you'll say somebody's alive. Right? So they're the symptoms of the prana. Because they function by. So only when prana is there do they function. The opponents are doubtful if this creation of prana is literal or allegorical. Right? Because that's the easiest thing to do. Is something that doesn't make sense to you in your philosophy, you just say it's an allegory. Right? And things that are an allegory, then you'll say, no, this is direct understanding. So like that. They just deal with the Shastras as they please. That's the... Hence, the Sutrakar proves that the creation of prana is literal, since the prana is material in nature, for the purpose of totality in his presentation, and to destroy even the minutest doubts brought forth by the opposition, who equate the creation of jiva with the creation of prana. He further verifies the creation of jiva is allegorical, since Vedanta Sutra 2.3.16, Nat mashurter nityatvach cha tabhyaha. It is demonstrated that the jiva is not born because its eternal spiritual nature is understood from Shruti and Smriti. Even if the scriptures speak of the jiva's creation, it's only in terms of the jiva being an effect of the Supreme Lord's potency. Right? So there it's only giving you that. So that's the whole point. Without the direction of the acharyas, we will not actually understand the scripture. Because the writing is done in such a way that you can get all, means from the mundane platform, you can get all varieties of understanding. But when you hear it from the original source, then you understand that one understanding. So it's not different things. It's one thing. Just people choose what they want out of it. Does that make sense? It's just like we're saying, you have a full menu. Let's say we, let us take, let's say, if it'll work, a menu for a wedding, right? So basically that means, you know, in a context of whatever could be, what's practical for people to actually even deal with, it's the maximum amount of items in the menu, according to, you know, the local, you know, cuisine. Does that make sense? Now, from that, if we just take, you know, a full range, but not so many, it's just like, just say, for example, you might have two different kinds of, you might have a neem begun and a shukta. You might have a variety of spinach, varieties of dal, right? Regular dal, a sweet dal with lau in it, dal with corella in it. Does that make sense? So many kinds of fried things. So many, it goes on and on and on. Right? Because, you know, main thing is, you know, how you say, not that anyone can eat it all, but they'll be impressed. Right? Like that. So, now if we just take one out of every category, you know, of the best, and put that together, now we have a feast. Right? Now if we just pick and choose a few things, we have a snack. And if we just take rice, dal, and one sabji like that, then we have like a regular meal. You know, a daily kind of eating. Right? So, we can look at it that, oh, these are all different things. They don't have connection, but someone who actually understands cooking and menus knows it's one system. It's not many. Does that make sense? So they're coming up with the ideas that you have all the, you have all these different things that they're all different, but Brahman is expanding as prana. Prana then empowers the senses so that the senses can work. Right? But the prana, the senses, the jiva, and the manifest gross senses, they're all different, but they're all the same. You know, you still only have the Lord, the living entity, and material energy. So
when required, you can categorize as material energy. When required, you can differentiate what is
it. Yes, it's just like that. If you just say cooking, that's all you have to do. But if you need, you differentiate.
Yes.
So the difficulty comes is that because of not knowing the actual, you know, cooking and the science of cooking and the menus and all this, therefore they don't know what's real and what's not. Because if you're under the burden of the avidya shakti, right, which anyone will be until they are actually liberated by devotion, right, when they come to the platform of bhava bhakti, right, and they're established in their relationship with Krishna, then you can say there, that's actual liberation. Does that make sense? So before that, what they call liberation is simply just another aspect of material existence. So then they don't know how, what's real and what's not, because they don't know beyond their concept of liberation. They don't know, they'll take real liberation as an illusion. So anything that's bringing out real liberation or devotional service, then they'll take that as allegorical. Right? And then aspects where you're just using allegory because it makes it more easily understood for understanding pure bhakti. Right? So it means you can use time and space to give the example and people will catch it. But for the jiva, there isn't, you don't have that. There is no time. They didn't begin. There is no end. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the, so then they'll take those ones as real. Does that make sense? So the ones about pure devotion they'll take as allegorical, and the ones that prove their bogus philosophy, that are talking on the temporary platform, they'll take that as real. Well, for if you're looking at it not from the avidya shakti, but from the internal potency, then it's the opposite way. So you're always going to have this problem. And these are the smart ones. Right? Than just the general person who's absorbed in mundane pursuit of happiness. Then they're, you know, less smart. So, yeah. It is important to note that the whole discussion here is about the conditions before the secondary creation, or at the time of pralaya. Despite this fact, the opposition maintained their claim that prana, senses, is eternal, right? Even though we see it manifest and it gets destroyed. Thus, the Shastra
and refers to prana, plural, as senses.
Oh, misconstruing thus. Okay, come on. The Shastra and... The Shastra?
Yes, the Shastras.
What do we need and for? Thus, the Shastra refers to prana as senses, right?
They misconstrue the Shastra, thus the Shastras, and they refer to prana, plural, as senses. So, one is prana, which is...
Oh, thus they misconstrue the Shastra.
Yes.
Okay. And...
Prana.
Refer to prana as the senses. Okay.
So they're considering now based on singular and plural. Because it is plural, prana, therefore it is senses. Not one sense, multiple senses. That's how they're doing. So on that particular word.
Oh, because they're still trying to bring about oneness.
Yes.
Okay. This is because before the creation, only Brahman existed, and the plural refers to Brahman's unlimited manifestation. This is because before the creation, only Brahman existed, and the plural refers to Brahman's unlimited manifestations. Hence, the Shrutis are correct from every viewpoint that there is no contradiction. Right, so there's only Brahman, but Brahman has, through the energies, unlimited manifestation. So in this way you have many, and at the same time you have one. Right? So nityo nityanam chaitanas chaitananam. You have the one, you have the many. But the many refers to the expansions of his energy, but the energy and the Lord are non-different, therefore there's one. The Sutrakar later in Vedanta Sutra 3359, Bhumna kratu dvaj jvayastvam tatahi darshayati, confirms that possession of multiple forms is the best quality of the Lord, pervading everything like the sacrifice. This is also stated in Shruti. To the objection why the word prana is not considered ordinary is explained by the Sutrakar diligently as follows. Asat exists before the creation, and if the Shastras declare prana to exist before the creation, then it leads us to conclusion that prana is equal to asat. And that asat is equal to Brahman, as confirmed earlier in Vedanta Sutra 1.4.15, Samak Karshat, that taking all the passages together, asat means Brahman, because before the creation of the material world, the Supreme Brahman's names and form had not existed in the material world. The Supreme Brahman is sometimes known as asat, non-existent. So he's known as Jiva, he's known as asat, he's known as sat. So that point is that he is everything. So you have to know the context in which the scriptures are talking about. That's why we hear from the acharyas. So if you're taking a Chintaveda Veda Tattva, that's how you approach, that's how it makes sense. Right? So, also early in two places in the first adhyaya, Pada 1, in Vedanta Sutra 1.2.23, Ata Eva Pranaha, and Vedanta Sutra 1.1.28, pranas tata nugamat. It was verified that prana refers to Brahman. Hence, the word prana for certain is Brahman. Also, a previous proof in Vedanta Sutra 1.4.28, etena sarve vyakyata vyakyataha, explains that all words in the scriptures should be interpreted to agree with the explanation that the Supreme Brahman is the original cause. Right? That's how it has to be done. When the ordinary sense of these words does not contradict the teachings of the Vedas, these names should be understood to be names of Lord Vishnu. This is reconfirmed as well in Vedanta Sutra 2.3.15. Chara chara vyapashrayastu syat tat vyaparesho bhaktas tad bhava bhavitaha, that he resides in all that moves and does not move. Therefore it will be known that every word is one of his names. Right? So all words, all meanings, that all is coming from Krishna. So it all means Brahman. And now it also has its application, because anything that's connected with that and functioning based on that also has that name. Right? Just like the senses are known as prana because they're based on prana. So therefore, Krishna being the origin of everything, anything that is based on that origin is also has that name. Right? So he is Asat. Right? Because he is beyond what's here. You have that only at a certain point in time after Brahma's creation, then is he known by these names. Right? Does that make sense? So it's based on him. Because he's eternal, so then you have to consider it. How would he be asat unless it's in connection with the material world? Right? So then you have the primary aspects, they'll have the names there. Then you have the secondary manifestation, then they'll have the names, but it's all based on Brahman.
And what do they say? That it's not?
Their idea is that there's the variety in Brahman, that's asat. The jivas are everything. Only Brahman is sat, so they can't. They don't believe that the creation itself is real. So they spend all their time working with it, dealing with it, and talking about it. So if it's not real, why talk about it? You know, like that. That's the whole thing. You know, it's like sitting in a house and saying the house is illusion, that we're all sitting outside. So how can we get outside? You're already outside. Why are you worrying about it? The philosophy is right, they're already liberated now. But they have to go through a process. That means they're dealing with something. So it's a problem. Because we have to remember, Shankaracharya was sent to bewilder them, not give them, you know, full knowledge. Because they're already bewildered by Lord Buddha. Right? So, but they gave up the Vedas. And so then, in that bewilderment, then you have to bring them back. So they're doing it a step at a time. So the first thing is bring them back to the Vedas. So now, instead of the basis of their bewilderment being what Buddha said, now their basis of bewilderment is what Shankaracharya said based on the Veda. So now they follow the religion, the Vedic religion. No, they don't have a Vedic philosophy. So now the next thing is then the Vaishnavacharyas will bring it back to the Vedic philosophy. Right? And then the essence of that will be given by Lord Chaitanya. So.
In summary, in this adhikaran, second last.
When the ordinary sense of these words does not contradict the teaching of the Vedas, these names should be understood to be names of Lord Vishnu. This is reconfirmed as well further in Vedanta Sutra 2.3.15. Charachara vyapara shrayas tu syat tat vyaparesho bhaktas tad bhava bhavita. That he resides in all that moves and does not move. Therefore it will be known that every word is one of his names. In summary, in this Adhikarna, the word prana refers to senses and Brahman as well. Therefore, in order to understand the accurate meaning of prana, the framework of discussion has to be carefully reflected upon. Thus, this Adhikarna refutes the Purvapakshin and proves that Brahman is the origin of prana. Show me of Adhikarna 1. Vishaya, there are two types of prana, secondary and primary. The secondary ones are 11 senses starting with the eye. The primary pranas are the five pranas, such as prana and apana. The secondary senses are now examined. Etasmaj jayate prano manas sarvendaryani. From this was born prana, the mind and all the senses. Mundaka Upanishad 2.1.3. Shamshaya. is this description of the creation of the senses metaphorical, like the description of the creation of the jiva, or literal, like the description of the creation of ether and other elements, purva paksha? This is explained in the following words of the Shruti Shastra. Asad va idam agra asid, tad ahu kim tad asid iti rishayo vava te asad asid, tad ahu ke te rishaya iti prana vava rishayaha. Asat existed in the beginning. What was that? Asat was these sages. Who are these sages? The pranas were the sages. Satapata Brahmana 611. Here, since it is said that the pranas are sages, meaning the senses existed previous to the creation, the senses must be like the jiva with no creation. Siddhanta.
Regarding this, when the jiva was created or whatever, manifested, it does have the senses. But we are talking here about material senses and spiritual senses that we...
They don't even know about spiritual, so we don't even get into that at this point.
Because what they say, it makes sense that the senses were created with the jiva. Just they don't...
No, but the point is that the jiva is not created.
Manifested.
Yes, but they're already there. So the difficulty comes up is they can't distinguish between what's eternal and what's temporary.
Oh, so they claim everything is temporary.
Then. Either everything's temporary, everything's eternal. It's always going to be in the wrong place. You know, whatever it should be, it generally would be the opposite. A few things are connected. You know, but. That's not necessarily glorious, other than they're trying to follow the scriptures. So that they follow scripture, they accept guru, they have a practice, they have regulation. These things are all good, but the problem is they're misapplying that, and their process won't give what they're looking for. It won't satisfy the soul. So it's a matter of taking that and now understanding the proper Vedic conclusions, and then taking up the worship of the Lord. So with that, now all that knowledge that they have, that sadhana that they have, that focus, determination, detachment, all these things, now will give some fruit. Otherwise, the only fruit it gives is the hard work that you put into it. That's all. That's the only benefit. You put in all that hard work, that's the only benefit you get, is that you put in hard work. Sutta 241. Tata pranaha. Tata, so prana, the pranas. The senses are created like other elements. Sutra Prakashika. All the senses have their origin in the Lord, because you have the soul has senses, but they don't know about the spiritual aspect. So what you're dealing with here, these are all created. The particular, again, each body you go to, they'll be different. Does that make sense? But the senses and the soul, those are there. Those that are manifest. So you have so many layers that are going on. You have Brahman, then you have the Pradhan, then you have then he's entered that into the life force, that then enters into the senses. The senses then are being manifest through the particular one of that particular body. So, you know, all that's going on to make it work.
But in the natural, they say that Brahman is eternal, everything else is temporary, and
yes.
everything
but at the same time, they're trying to say it's eternal. So that doesn't make sense. Why would they say it's eternal when they've said everything except Brahman is temporary? So that's the difficulty. When you're talking about how the jiva means, how you say, when you talk about the Lord and his energies, where we say that they're one, they'll say no. There's illusion and there's Brahman, so they're different. And then what we'll say is that therefore but at the same time we'll say is, but they're individuals. So even though they're the same, they're different. And they'll say no, they're one. So that's the problem. It's always backwards from what it should be. All these there'll be some, as we said, there's some points that are common. Like that. But after that, it's not common. Just like, let's say, from one cuisine to the next, they use fire, you know, the concept of frying or boiling or steaming and, you know, like that is there, spicing. So those basic techniques are the same. So you could say is therefore all the cooking is the same. But at the same time, as you see, it's quite different, the effect of how they apply it. So that's why you can call it by a particular name. Does that make sense? You know, like that. But then, yes. Does that make sense? But then on the other side, when we're bringing out things, you'll see it'll come up. Even though you have all these different cuisines, you know by the principle of cooking, it's all just one thing. Because they can't, one cuisine can't be using a technique that's outside cooking. It's all just aspects of cooking. It's just which ones they use. You know, it's just like, let's say, generally in the you know, Orient or in Asia, they'll use ginger in their cooking, right, as a standard thing. But as you go west from the Orient, then only in specific preparations may use it. You know, like in the West, they'll maybe put ginger in ginger snaps, like that. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, we call them snaps because they're hard. When they break, they snap. So, called ginger snaps.
Gingerbread.
Yeah, gingerbread. But it's a few things. But it's not. If you make a vegetable, ginger's not standard. So it's just. You know, it's just there, but it's not that use of ginger is something that's not there. You could put it into their cooking. It would work, but it would change the nature of it. You know what I'm saying? You could put, the ginger in the Italian cooking, but then you'd say it's not Italian. But the point is, it would work. It would taste nice. You know what I'm saying? It just changes the thing, but it's so cooking is one thing. So as the prana is manifest, you have different senses. But it's still one life force. But that's coming from then the Lord. So, yeah. So the basic point is that we're clear on which way it is. And so then if we're clear that we're convinced in our philosophy, we're situated in our philosophy, then all these other aberrations, you know, they're just variations in that are not correct. You wouldn't do that. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Okay, Sutra Prakashika. All the senses have their origin in the Lord, since this is the verdict of the Shrutis. When the Shastras speak of the creation of Jiva, it is simply allegorical, because the Jiva, being spiritual in nature, is not subject to the six transformations of matter. Either... Earlier, the Sutrakar in Vedanta Sutra 2.3.16, Nat masruter nityatvach cha tabhya, demonstrated that the jiva is unborn because its eternal spiritual nature is understood from Shruti and Smriti. The scriptures speak of the jiva's creation only in terms of the jiva being an effect of the Supreme Lord's potency. However, when the Shastras speak of the creation of senses, it is literal, since the senses are material in nature. Sri Govinda Bhashya, Siddhanta. Just as ether and other elements arise from the Supreme Lord, pranas, or senses, also arise from Him, since the Shrutis say that before the creation, only one entity existed, and from Him the mind and senses arose. In the beginning of creation, the ingredients of the material world were merged together into one. Then the different ingredients were manifested. Manas sarvendriyani chaitasmat jayanta. The mind and senses arose from the Lord. Mundaka Upanishad? Yeah. One cannot say that the senses arise like the jiva, since the jiva is not subject to the six transformations. That is always present in matter. Thus, the creation of jivas is figurative only. Right? Because they're trying to say it goes together. Because they're using it in the context together, but no, it's separate. Because the jiva is not affected by the transformations, but the senses are. Right?
So we can definitely say that we can understand this only through our parampara and our acharyas?
Yes. It means you'll understand the Vaishnava conclusion through any of the Vaishnava acharyas. Yes. But for use in our life to support our approach to worshipping Krishna, then only through Achintaveda Vedatattva, through our acharyas. Because the point is any of the acharyas, by understanding what they're saying, it'll get you beyond the Mahatattva. But where in the Mahatattva, that's according to your specific philosophy. So if you want to get the Braj, then you want to use Achintabheda-Veda Tattva. Right? Because even though they deal with Vrindavan, the pastimes of Krishna and that sweetness, they do it from their perspective, so they don't get to Braj. They get to manifestations of Vrindavan and lower Goloka. Right? Not Gokul.
Any other Sampradaya?
Yes. So they're dealing in a different realm. Like that. It's all in Goloka. But the point is it's in the Goloka part, not the Gokul part. So Goloka part is actually Vaikuntha. So it's just an aspect of Vaikuntha. Maybe the maximum sweetness you can get within Vaikuntha. But it won't go beyond into Braj because of their philosophy. So that's why it's Achintabheda-Veda Tattva. That's the full, complete, the original philosophy. You know, just like Braj is original. Radha and Krishna and Braj are the original. Then from there expands everything else into Vaikuntha. And then from there, then also then the Purusha avatars, you get the material world. Because the senses are material, their creation is literal. The sages and the Puranas mention the quotation from Saptapada Brahmana actually mean the Lord. This is so because both these words are names of the all-knowing Supreme Person, right? So we wouldn't understand that without the Acharyas. So when it talks about they're the sages, that means it's the Lord. They're the Prana, that means the Lord. So in the one sentence, it'll be talking about the senses themselves that are manifest and about the Lord who's the origin of the senses. So that's the difficulty. But because it's written in the Nyaya Prashtan, in this particular generic way, it's more hidden. That without the Acharya's commentary, it can't be understood. So you see is that when we're dealing with these words, it's with the commentary only that you can understand. But what you see when Jiva Goswami in the Sandarbhas, when he writes, he's also writing in the Nyaya Prashtan form. But he's already wrote into the sutras themselves the explanation. So if there's commentaries, then that just gives further understanding, deeper understanding. So does that make sense? We'll be able to catch that easier. This, because of the nature of how it's written, it's harder to catch. Yes.
We see that in contemporary things that Vaishnavas argue about. They base it on Srila Prabhupada, and the point that Andrew Vivasa was mentioning, prescriptive and descriptive. And even though Srila Prabhupada says certain things, and he might not clarify it enough for everybody to understand it in the same way. So what should we do in this group?
But the thing is you have to see is that when Prabhupada's making statements, they have to be in context of that. So how would that reconcile? So if you're seeing that there's a difference, it means you're not seeing what's the central point being made there. Right? So you have to know what's there. Like you see all living entities as equal, right? That's a principle that's given. You see, it's 11th canto, they all talk about that. The Vaishnavas see all living entities as equal. But at the same time, as you see them all talking about Vaishnava etiquette and all these different things and the culture and all these different aspects. So you could say is that, so therefore we have to deal with everybody exactly the same. Right? Make no distinction. So then in that, if we're putting it together, they're all seen the same, but what's the definition of how they're all seen the same? When you're just talking on that point, not bringing up the external. They're souls, they're part and parcel of Krishna, so they all have that same inherent nature. They're all jiva tattva, so they all have the same nature. Right? So in that way, you know, as servant of the Lord, that's the nature we're talking about. Now, the particular taste they have and all that in the spiritual platform manifests the different forms and activities there. and relationships. So in the same way, is because the soul is an individual, then according to their taste, they're situated in a different place within the cycle of karma. Therefore, they have different forms and situations and, you know, activities, desires. So then when we're talking about the equality, we're talking about the nature of the soul. We're not talking about their external form. Now if we try to apply that equality on the external form, then that's not going to work out. So does the dog get for lunch, let's say 100 kilos of sugar cane? Or does the elephant get, you know, 5 chapatis and that's it? You know, I mean, which equality do we do? And then they'll argue over that and so many things like that. And take the sugar cane, wrap it in the chapatis, so then, you know, so many different, you know, saying. So the speculation comes out because we're not seeing the definition as it's said and then progressing from there. We're putting it in the context. Where does the context come up that you teach everyone, deal with everyone externally the same? Right? Because it's, yes, it comes up from something that we've created. It doesn't come up from the philosophy. It doesn't come up from the Vedic culture or religion. So philosophy and religion don't apply that. That's a modern, you know, construction. Does that make sense? So that's the problem, is they're saying, it's said that if Prabhupada's confusing here. No, they're confusing what Prabhupada's saying. So you just have to take what he's saying as what he's talking about. See it in the context of it. There shouldn't be a contradiction. So when you're talking about the straight spiritual, then, in other words, the religious processes have to be seen in context of the philosophy. Because the religion is how you manifest that philosophy. But it has to be manifestation of the philosophy. It can't change it. Does that make sense? So that's what's happening here. So then the acharya. So in another place, Prabhupada will give a definition and all that, just that we don't tend to put them together. So if one is generally accepting the philosophy and the culture, then one can start to put them together. But if one accepts the philosophy, not the culture, then there'll always be a problem. So that's generally what's happening. Is the culture is not appreciated, the philosophy is accepted, but the culture is not appreciated. And so therefore then, if there comes too much of a disparity between what Prabhupada's talking about and what we think it is, then we might even try to change the philosophy to match. You know, like the six schools do. You know, so that's why these things aren't important. These kind of viewpoints aren't important. And doing that, where you make where you change the philosophy, you know, to match your what material position you're professing, then that's considered very dangerous. You know, of dangerous things in society, that's one of the most dangerous.
And this recent controversies about the diction in Shiksha and women guru. So in what light can we see that one? Because they also confuse it what Srila Prabhupada said.
Yes, but then let us look at this. How does the Uttama see all living entities?
Equal.
And equal on what platform?
Devotion.
Yes, on the platform of devotion. Okay. Now, within the spiritual realm, can you tell the difference between one living entity and another and their rock? Can you tell the difference between Sudama, you know, and Mother Jashoda? And their rasas and that, and one's in you know, how you say, in her house, in Nanda Bhavan, and the others are doing some other things, and this and that. You can tell the difference. So, in other words, they see everyone the same, but they can tell the difference. Right? Like Sukadeva Goswami, it's all one, it's all Brahman, but he can tell the difference between the path Brahman and the tree Brahman. That's why he doesn't bump into the tree. Right? Because it didn't say that Vyasadeva was running after Sukadeva, and Sukadeva kept bumping into trees and falling over, but he was so quick, and because he was younger, he was only 16, and Vyasadeva was a bit older, so then he couldn't keep up with him. He'd still get up and keep running and all that. You know, so it was like a, what do you call those? Pinball machine, you know, bouncing off all the things and like that. And stuff. Yeah. So now when we get down into the Madhyama, then what are they? What kind of defines them?
Differentiation.
They differentiate, but based on what?
Krishna consciousness.
Yes, about there's the Lord, there's, you know, those who are senior, those equal, who's junior, right? Amongst the Vaishnavas, there's those who are innocent, and then there are those who are inimical. Right? So they're going to be seeing on that same platform, but they're going to be able to distinguish to apply it in the functioning. So in other words, the culture and all that they're able to perform, but from the platform of Naishkarma. That's the definition. Mandala means Naishkarma. And then when we get down to the neophyte, how are we defining that? Right? One word. Prakriti. Right? Means material. So here, when we're talking about equality, we're talking about equality based on the manifestation of the gross body. So, in other words, this kind of understanding is purely a neophyte discussion. So they're trying to say, no, but probably this. No, it's a neophyte discussion only. Madhivas and Uttamas don't need to have this discussion, because they don't have a problem with these things. They can balance between the philosophy, the culture, and all that. But here you're trying to say they're exactly the same. But then on other areas you say they're the same, then they'll say no. You know what I'm saying? Just like, okay, if a man speaks strongly with a woman, that's bad, it's abusive, it's this and that, it's nonsense, and we can go on for days, weeks, months, have marches, and do the whole thing. But if a woman, you know, chews out a man, that's perfectly normal and standard, and that should be done. So if we're talking equal, then great. Make it all the same, but then the ladies should stop getting on the case of their husbands. Right? Like that. He gets a dhoti, she gets a sari. Her sari doesn't cost any more than his dhoti. Or his dhoti costs as much as her sari. You know, that Shantipur dhoti with the nice gold borders and everything like that, you know. Like that, yeah. You know what I'm saying? So, but why is it that it's, you know? Why is it the man puts on a fancy shirt and we call him a materialist? But when the girl puts on a really fancy sari, we just say she looks nice. You know, why not? Why isn't she a materialist? You know what I'm saying? The guys shave their head, ladies shouldn't shave their heads. Or the guys can keep their long hair and, you know, look like, what do you call it, you know, Aragon or something, you know. Something. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing is, you know, so where are we doing equality? Nowhere. Right? So it's only where there seem to be possibly an advantage that women can get out of it. And that advantage is taken out as, in other words, taken away from the men. It's not that it's shared. Right?
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So different. There's a different concept of sharing.
Yeah.
Sharing means whatever you have, give to me. And the other concept, the lower concept is, you know, we'll divide it up equally. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's the difficulty we're dealing with. We're dealing with the external mundane perception of things. And then we're viewing that through from a non-Vedic perspective. So we're trying to cover up our modern materialistic, you know, atheistically based moral principles by trying to quote philosophy. But notice they skip Dharma, which means theistic moralism. So we'll try to use the philosophy, you know, but we're not even using the Anandamaya philosophy. We're using the Vijnanamoy philosophy. We're not the body, we're the soul. To defeat theistic moralism, to establish atheistic moralism. You know, so we're using the two points of sandhi between the three situations of rasa to establish each other. Because in the senses, that's where taste is. That's the partiva rasa. Then, if you follow theistic moralism, that's where you find the emotional rasa, the swargiya rasa. And then in anandamaya, meaning the devotion to the Lord, that's where you taste Vaikuntha rasa. Right? So the sandhi between the partiva rasa and the swargiya rasa, that's pranamaya. It kind of has a little of both, but it doesn't really have either, because you can't really enjoy the senses, because then that's not good, because it doesn't look good. And you can't really accept the theistic moralism, because then that means I have to follow authority. Well, if I accept the atheist, I can do whatever I want. right? And then, so it doesn't really taste rasa there. You have to move one way or the other, right? And then in the Vijnanamoy, it means you may be following the rules that are there in the Manamoy, you know, in the theistic moralism. But it's not about tasting the emotions and all that, because that's considered maya. But then the spiritual, then that's in relationship to Krishna and his pleasure. We're not talking that. We're not talking, the question of Krishna's pleasure never comes up once in this discussion. Because it's not about that. It's about whoever is professing it wants what they want from the system. It's not about the pleasure of Krishna. Because otherwise, if it was the pleasure of Krishna, why then there isn't more stuff happening? You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, because Krishna likes to deal with his women in a particular way. So, yes, they are guru, but Mother Jashoda, she's guru. Kunti Devi's guru. You know, so many others guru, but in that capacity. You know what I'm saying? Sandipani Muni's, Yoga Maya is Sandipani Muni's wife. But we don't hear much happen when Krishna goes to Gurukul. You don't hear really anything of her. Because it's just a different rasa. It's just a matter of how the rasa works. You know what I'm saying? So, you're taking one Sandhi and trying to prove the other Sandhi at the expense of the what's solid. You know what I'm saying? So, that's the point, is that it sounds like it's dealing with Sandhi, but it's not. So, it has the emotional thing, but not based on actual emotions. You know? So, it becomes this weird kichari. So if you just take it from its original thing. So another, if we approach from another angle, another difficulty that is the, you could say, the trademark or the franchise of the neophytes, is they don't distinguish, they don't make a proper, in dealing with Diksha and Siksha gurus, the Diksha guru is the serious and the Siksha is the side thing. But for the Madhyamas, it's the Siksha that's important, and Diksha is there just so that you take Siksha seriously. So it's all about Siksha. So, in here, it's that one has to become a Diksha guru to be in that capacity, but culturally, the woman can be a Siksha guru and can be respected in that capacity already by inherently how the Vedic culture is established. But one wants the external trappings. Right? That's the problem. And at the same time, one wants all the external trappings that women get. Now let us say we have two gurus, okay? A man guru and a woman guru, and they come to the door at the same time.
She's first.
Yeah, she's first. But what happened to the equality? Why doesn't she open the door for him? If she opens the door for him, oh, then that subservient thing and the men and this and that. He opens it for her, then either it's accepted because it has that aspect of they have a little old school, or, oh, he's patronizing, he thinks, it's just like you cannot win. So we're not dealing with philosophy and culture here. We're just dealing with the emotional nature of women. And they're just trying to make it bring it out, instead of keeping it in the house amongst family members, bringing it out on the street so everyone can appreciate. So then it's not right. You know what I'm saying? Because that's the whole point is that that means then any man, he has to submit like that. Does he get to have the pleasantries of all that laughing and joking and that with that women guru? No. Right? So then why does he have to deal with all the other stuff? Right? His husband and wife can be home, laugh, joke, all these different things like that. And he's got to go out and work his, you know, backside off to take care of it. You know, deal with all the ups and downs and all that. It goes together. It's a package. But here it is that there's no shelter. And they want everybody, any man, can be, that they can take advantage of getting all the facility, but they don't get any of the positive stuff that's there in the masculine-feminine interaction. So it's just an extension of the girls on the street. You know, they've had bad relations at homes, with the boys, with this and that. But it's not that they they give, they're not into the, you know, the boys or this and that, but it's not that they give up wanting to be how you say, noticed. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like the others appreciate that there she's dressed nicely, good, but the emotional energy in that she doesn't want out on the street. Mm-hmm. You know, the right people have to notice that she dressed nicely. Does that make sense? Like that. But out on the street, no, you have to catch everybody's attention. Like that. And if you can get both sides of the street, now you're really doing good. You know? But, you know, depending on who it is, then they could, you'll notice them right there or, you know, like 50, 100 feet away. I remember one, I think we were in Sydney or something, just walking down the street. And there's this girl, how she walks, how she's dressed, and everything like that. She's putting out so much energy. From 100 feet away, she's already catching attention. And from 100 feet away, when I saw her, I looked away. Right? And all the other guys are looking in this, and then at some point turn away, you know, like that. But the initial, they're not. So because I turned away in the initial, when she got up close, she wouldn't look at me. You know, because I hadn't, how you say, reciprocated in the approved way from 100 feet away. You know, so it's a whole. So that modern thing, why are we trying to apply that within Krishna consciousness and trying by hook or by crook to prove that it's good? Because the Shastra says that she's on the liberated platform, what's the problem? But we're trying to extend it down where we're dealing with the neophyte mentality and the masculine and feminine, you know, normal, you know, family and community interaction, that it's got to be this. But they don't act as community. Because if they did, they would take care of everybody. You know what I'm saying? So you don't see, it's not matched. So that's why in the Vedic culture, without the scriptures, without the acharyas, we don't know who has what rights and obligations at what point. So because it's balanced, it has to function everywhere. You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty, is that there's certain things done. Not that something can't be done, but it has its exceptional places. So only in those, in very specific situations can it be done. Like, you're not going to get anyone more mature in God consciousness, you know, let's say, in, for what we would know, than, let's say, Janava Mata. Right? And we do call it Janava Mata, not Janava Prabhu. Right? And so, she, as far as what is the conclusions, all the acharyas are hearing from her. But the context in which she does that, because being a woman, therefore she does it in the context of the culture that goes with that. So she doesn't come out and you know, for the Gaur Purnima festival, make the big speech and everything like that. She does all the talking inside, in her own place. If someone wants to do that, they come to her. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you're in a senior position if someone has to come to you. But it's not seen like that. Oh, we're in the neg, we have to be stuck in the house. You know, it's just all these things, everything becomes turned upside down. And then add a little emotion, and then somehow or another it's authority. Is that make sense? So that's the difficulty we're dealing with, is that there is culture, there is examples. But they deal in a certain way. And that makes the culture work. Just like there's examples of how the men work. So if the men aren't acting how they should work, they should start to act how is recommended. Not that women act not how it's recommended. You know, in other words, the men have to ask how it's recommended, though they're not, but the women can act not how it's recommended, and that's okay. You know what I'm saying? Where's the logic here? You know, where's the basis? Where's the background? You know, because the problem comes is that even these girls become gurus and all that, they'll still be unsatisfied. Because now what's the rare, unattainable thing to get? Means women want the impossible. Right? But once you have all the things that are forbidden, what's next? You know, being God, or you know, being the deity or something, or you know, I mean, what are they going to do next? You know, you're not supposed to, you know, deal with Shaligram. Okay, that one's gone by, but you hear no kerfuffle about it anymore. It's just going on. Who's worshiping? Who cares? So then you go, and then the Yajna thing, you know, made a bit of a stink about it, but who likes to get ghee all over their nice sari and burn holes in it? So it's not that popular. So all that's left is the Guru thing. And once you have that, then what's next?
Mm.
Then what do you do? What's the issue? What do you... Huh? Sannyas?
Queen of the world.
Sorry?
Queen of the world.
Queen of the world. Why the world? The universe.
Yeah.
This universe. Yeah, they already have this universe. So. But, yeah, you start like that. It's Miss Universe, and as you go down, and then when it gets a little bit, and the only thing that's left is being the guru, right? So the and the sannyas is that's there is that who is actually detached, where they're not worried about position. Right? So the thing is, and you can say so, but so many men are like that, but they're not supposed to be like that. So you can't base that the women are like that based on that. Men are supposed to get rid of that, and if they don't, they have problems. And then if a woman has that problem, it'll be, you know, nine times more. So you're dealing with some very far things. So, but sannyas is there. So many women in the suburb have taken sannyas. But what's the culture of how they apply that sannyas? Right? They shave their head, wear white cloth, and, you know, they're recluses. This they're going to put on saffron with a little, you know, cute little, you know, how you say, Yves Saint Laurent, you know, 1 foot tall, you know, dunda that they can stick in their little side bag, this kind of thing, and cut the profile. That's totally bogus. Why would you do that? It means they have their manifestation of how they apply sannyas. And Gopal Bhatta Goswami mentions about it, but it's rare that you have such examples. You know what I'm saying? You know, you say the sannyasis are falling down. In L.A. at one time, I forget what year it was. I think it was back in the 80s. There were 15 girls, all shaved heads, white and everything like that. And they're all there and, you know, the rah-rah, doing the whole thing, you know, like that. And then one of them somehow or another got interested in the guy and, you know, gave up that position. Within 1 year, all 15 were married. So the whole point is this, these things, that, so therefore it's a rare thing. You don't make it as a standard thing. If someone's qualified, they can do it. Yes, they can, just like for most women, staying within the grihastha environment is comfortable for them. But to be vanaprastha, they can do. You know, Kunti Devi was eating once a month, literally. You know, like that. You know, so it's just, you know, they can do they can do. You know, they can also be brahmacharis. They can, so therefore they can be sannyas. But it's rare. So that's the whole thing. So that's why generally then there's positions that everybody is functions within. And then you do. So that's why the philosophy is there, but there's the culture. And so it's a rare thing, but they're trying to make it as just a standard thing, like any lady. No, it's not. It's just rare. The men's nature, more of them in a volume can do those things. Like that. Does that make sense? Because technically it's recommended someone who has a brahminical nature, they'll do all right as sannyas. Right? So, either they have inherently a brahminical nature, and they have the devotion, then it'll be quite easy. If they have the inherent nature, but not the devotional, then they may be able to be the sannyasi, but it'll be a bit dry and formal and not very attractive to anybody. Or, by their, you know, advanced devotion, whatever their background, then they're situated on the brahminical platform, then they'll be able to function in that category. You know, so that's what you're dealing with. So then if you had a woman who's brahminical by nature and that strong devotion that is very advanced, but then someone who's that advanced, why would they do this? You know, it's just like, you know, it's mentioned, the acharyas, that if you're an uttamadhikari where you have no bodily identification, why wouldn't you follow the rules? You know, it's just like Arjuna is an Uttamadikar, but he follows the rules of being a Grihastha and a Kshatriya. What's the problem? You're doing it for Krishna. So there's things, no, we can't do this, but that shows it's not an advanced position. Is that anything? Yeah, so like that, you have to see the context in with all the different things. So if Prabhupada says he wants all his disciples to be guru, why does that mean diksha? Why does it mean diksha?
Because it's prestige.
Because it's prestige. Well, siksha guru, that's the point. There's no prestige in it. And why is that? Because of the nature of the neophytes. Otherwise, there should be prestige, you know, equal prestige with the siksha and the diksha. But it's not. Therefore, so everybody being a guru means, that's what Lord Chaitanya, he gave the order. Whoever you see, whoever you meet, tell them about Krishna. That he said, whoever you see, whoever you meet, you know, give them initiation. Said, whoever you see, whoever you meet, speak about Krishna. So it's siksha. That's how everybody is. This is a guru. And then within those, then some may be diksha. Because even you're giving siksha to so many people, how many of those do you give diksha to? Right? So it's a more specific thing. Does that make sense? And it also has to be understood as just a last final cultural thing. Because you're somebody's diksha guru doesn't mean that you're everybody else's diksha guru. You know what I'm saying? So when Haridas Thakur then mentions three different levels of guru, the Adi Guru, the Sad Guru, and the preachers, that you may be, we're not going to be Adi Guru, that's Prabhupada. Right? So then in the Sad Guru you have siksha and diksha. Right? Then even though you may be a siksha or diksha guru on that second level to somebody, you're not to others. To the others, you're on the third level. So then, because that position is there, it should never be expected that you're going to get that second level treatment wherever you go from everybody. Because anybody who did function like that, they're not around anymore. Mm-hmm. Literally. You know what I'm saying? So that's the problem. Is that we have to see is that we have to know what you're dealing with. So you take that context and then you look at it. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini ki.